Is there ever a time when you tell government authorities, no, we will not obey? Is it ever right to disobey the authorities in order to obey God? You better believe it.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire. I have been sitting here at my desk in my studio, chafing, ready to get on the air and spend this time together with you. So much to talk about. I'm so glad that you could be here with me. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I've been thinking a lot about the purpose of life. I've been thinking a lot about running our race and making our lives count. And I do want to speak to you briefly about that, especially in light of the news that 29-year-old Brittany Maynard with terminal brain cancer did end her own life over the weekend. Originally, it was going to be November 1st, I guess just one an extra day or two. I do want to talk about that, but something else happened on a more personal level in terms of something that affects my own world even more closely that's got me thinking about these things. So I want to chat with you about that. I have a whole lot to talk about in terms of when it is right for Christians who are called to be people under authority, who are called to be people who honor authority, who are called to be obedient, submitted people. When is it right to say to the government, to civil authorities, even to parents, I must obey God rather than man? And does that attitude open up the door to rebellion? Does that attitude open up the door to a defiant spirit, something that is very contrary to the gospel? We're going to focus on that. You can check out my latest article, Time to Obey God Rather Than Man. Just go to askdrbrown.org. And Friday, I hope you enjoyed the broadcast. It was a unique Q&A. I took you into a live class I was teaching in Dallas, Texas. You got to be in on 2 hours of the class. That was my overall broadcast for free. But we broke it down for a radio audience, answering some of the tougher questions about Jesus for Jewish people and issues of salvation. But I was not able to take calls as I normally would, not as many anyway. So if you want to call, if you had a Friday call that you wanted to put in a question, anything you wanted to ask me about, any Bible theology question, anything my expertise, I'm going to open the phone lines in general today as well, 866-34-TRUTH. So Betsy, the sky's the limit in terms of calls. We'll take 866-348-7884. But before I get into any of that, you've often heard me share my testimony and how God saved me as a heroin shooting LSD using hippie rock drummer at the age of 16 and a half in 1971. And I've often shared how I got saved in a little Italian Pentecostal church, which then was based in Queens, New York, and ultimately moved out to Long Island. And I went there to pull my two best friends out, the bass player and the guitar player in the group that I played with. They began going to this church because they were interested in two girls who were going. The girls were going because their uncle was the pastor. Their dad had been praying for them. God started to draw them in. I went to pull them out. Well, the bass player, who I prayed for often over the years with tears, he got soundly saved and helped lead me to the Lord. And within 5 years, he had fallen away. Probably within 4 years, had fallen away, and has been away from the Lord ever since. The guitar player helped lead me to the Lord, and then had a lot of ups and downs over the years, but had put his trust in God. He went to be with the Lord. Some days back, we just got the news that he went to be with the Lord a few days back. That's a big chunk of my history and life that's gone as well. And it makes me realize we need to redeem the time, friends. We need to run our race with perseverance. And for his family, may God's comfort and grace be with him at such a difficult time. Just 61 years old.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Is it ever right for followers of Jesus to tell the authorities, no, we will not obey? Is it ever right for followers of Jesus to tell the authorities, no, we will not obey? I mean, could you imagine a situation where a policeman pulls you over and stops you, and they want to see your license and registration, and you say, I'm out of here, buddy. You're not going to spoil my day, and you drive off. Well, obviously not if you're a follower of Jesus. If you're in school and the teacher says, Johnny, you need to turn in your assignment in math tomorrow. Are you going to fail the class? Who do you think you are? You're not my parents. Get out of my life. No, God forbid. That would never be right. Because we are not called to rebellion. We are called to obedience. We are not called to be children of dissension. We are called to be children of honor. We are not called to be troublemakers. We are called to be peacemakers. And yet, there are times, and there are clear scriptural examples for this, when it is right to tell the government, to tell authority figures, we will not obey you. Now, how do we know when the time is right for that? How do we distinguish between that and our own rebellious nature, between that and our own self-will, between that and our own desire for independence? How do we distinguish between the two? 866-34-TRUTH. Romans 13, everyone must submit to the governing authorities. For there's no authority except from God, and those that exist are instituted by God. So then the one who resists the authority is opposing God's command, and those who oppose it will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have its approval. For government is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, because it does not carry the sword for no reason. For government is God's servant, an avenger that brings wrath on the one who does wrong. Therefore, you must submit not only because of wrath, but also because of your conscience. And for this reason, you pay taxes, since the authorities are God's public servants, continually attending to these tasks. That's Paul, quite explicitly, in Romans, the 13th chapter. So, if the government tells you to do something you really don't like, you still have to do it. If the government puts restrictions on you that you don't like, you have to accept it, unless a line is crossed. And the Bible is very clear on that line. 866-34-TRUTH. Why am I pressing this issue today? It is because yesterday in Houston, Texas, the I Stand Sunday meeting was held. It was at Grace Chapel, pastored by my friend Steve Riggle, who's been on this broadcast talking about what has happened in Houston. There were special guests like Tony Perkins, who organized the event, Mike Huckabee, Phil Robertson, Todd Starnes, who was also on the air talking about related issues, and then my close friends David and Jason Benham also spoke there. And it was telling the city of Houston, and it was telling the nation, you are not going to take away our liberties. You are not going to take away our freedoms. You are not going to tell us what we can and can't preach. And you are not going to deprive us of the ability to vote on critical moral issues in our city and in our nation. Now, I only saw some parts of it. We've got some audio clips to play for you in a moment. I only saw some parts of this, but in point of fact, I 100% commend what they were saying, which is, when the government comes against our fundamental religious liberties, we will not obey the government. But now, please hear me. This is the big, big point. If you can only take away one thing, to repeat, we are not children of rebellion. We are not people of self-will. We are people of obedience. And when the earthly authorities tell us to disobey God's authority, With respect for the earthly authorities, we say we must obey God rather than man. Are you with me? Are you hearing me? It's not rebellion. It's not, who do you think you are? You got no business, man. No, no, no. It is out of honor for God and obedience to God. Look at it like this. You're a private in the army. Your senior authority, one level up, gives you a task, which is to clean the bathrooms in the men's dormitory, all right, where all of the privates are staying. Yes, sir. And you go about doing that, and then a general comes in. We'll make it extreme. A general comes in and says, I need you right now to run this errand for me. Drop what you're doing and do it. Out of obedience to the general, you disobey the lower authority. It's not out of, man, I don't want to do this bathroom. What does that guy think he is telling me to clean bathrooms? Man, I ever clean bathrooms? No, 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 no. That's rebellion. That's selfishness. That's lack of submission to authority. However, because we obey the highest authority, if God tells us to preach and someone says you can't preach, now I don't mean in a legally acceptable way. If a teacher says you are not allowed to get up in the middle of class and just start preaching and stand on your chair and preaching, it's not because of preaching, it's because of rules against disrupting the class, all right? But if you are if I'm told you're going to have to get off the air if you keep preaching Jesus, well, I'm going to preach Jesus. And if I'm put off the air, I'm put off the air. No one's threatening me with that. I'm just using that as an example. Why? Because we must obey God rather than man. It is a pattern throughout the Bible. Once more, to repeat, it is a matter of obedience. I'm going to go to the phones in a moment, but I want you to hear some of the clips from the I Stand Sunday event with thousands and thousands attending and tens of thousands watching. Let's start with this special message, an excerpt from this message by Senator Ted Cruz, clip number 12, Joey. This was recorded specifically for I Stand Sunday. This is what Ted Cruz had to say.
We have witnessed what happens when we stand together in defense of religious liberty. We have seen people around the nation defend the rights of pastors and congregations to practice their faith free from the government.
All right, and here's what my friend Jason Benham had to say. Jason and David shared time behind the pulpit. Clip number 13.
Now, we are at an Ephraim, Issachar moment in our nation's history. And which one are we going to be? The men of Ephraim, though armed with bows, turned back on the day of battle. They were unified. They had the armor to fight, but they turned back because they forsook God's law and they forgot what God had done. But the men of Issachar, they understood the times and they knew what they should do.
Exactly. Are we going to be those who retreat or those who stand up for what is right with a right spirit, not an angry attacking spirit, but with a right spirit, we are moving forward in obedience. Let's start in Landover, Maryland. Sam, welcome to the Line of Fire. Go ahead, Sam. You need to turn your radio down.
That's my window's down, so okay.
All right, go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air, Sam.
Oh, yes, hello, Dr. Brown. I was calling to buttress what you were just saying about this whole idea of civil disobedience, if you will.
Yep.
You know, it's a matter of what Daniel did in the book of Daniel, you know, when he was asked not to pray to God. So this is another example of what you were just talking about. You know, like
you're exactly right. In fact, there's several examples in Daniel. Of course, the first chapter, he makes an arrangement to not have to eat the king's food and things like that. So that's not an overt example. But for sure, in the third chapter, when they are commanded to bow down to an idolatrous statue, the three young men refuse to. They refuse to bow down to the statue. And if they're going to be thrown in the fire, they'll be thrown in the fire. The authority has the power to do that, but they're not going to bow down either way. And then the example you mentioned of Daniel in the sixth chapter of his book, when there's an edict put out that no one can pray except to the king for this period of time, Daniel goes on and prays the same as he always prayed before. In other words, he said, you throw me in the lions, Dan, you can do whatever you want to me. You can put me in prison, you can kill me, but I will not disobey God. Now, God never gave an explicit command, you must pray three times a day, but he absolutely did call us to pray and to turn to him. And there was a pattern to pray towards the temple, even in times of exile, and to pray for mercy and restoration. So no human being, even the king, was going to get Daniel not to pray. But notice, there was an authority that said, okay, then you get thrown in the lion's den. He was. God delivered him. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. By the way, in the second hour, which you can catch on my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, we're going to talk with my colleague, Pete LaBarbera, who was arrested in Canada for speaking the truth about moral issues on a college campus with an activist in Canada. In point of fact, they were completely within their legal rights to share these things on a campus and yet were arrested. And when they knew they'd be arrested, they still stood within their rights. Is that the right thing to do? Does that bring reproach to the gospel? Or is that the pattern that the apostles followed when they were told, you can't preach, don't speak anymore in Jesus' name? What do? They go out and preach. Here, Acts, the fifth chapter, okay? They are arrested. They are brought before the Jewish ruling council, which to them would be the highest, most respected leadership in the land. And they are told this. They are flogged, Acts 5:40, and they are ordered not to speak in the name of Jesus, not to speak in Yeshua's name. What happens? They went out from the presence of the Sanhedrin, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to be dishonored on behalf of the name. So they were flogged on behalf of the name of Yeshua, and they were rejoicing because of that. Now they're told, don't speak in the name of Jesus. And what do? Verse 42, every day in the temple complex, and in various homes, they continue teaching and proclaiming the good news that Jesus is the Messiah. Don't do it. We must obey God rather than man. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's listen to what my good friend David Benham had to say at I Stand Sunday. This is clip number 14.
Proverbs 28:4 says, those who forsake the law praise the wicked, but those who keep it resist them. We have lost the meaning of resistance, godly resistance, in our churches today. We have replaced it with relevance. Our nation needs a vibrant church willing to stand for Jesus Christ, unashamed, bold, and broken over our own sins.
Yes, and I appreciate David's emphasis there. Broken over our own sins, boldly standing against sin in society and the nation, refusing to compromise. 866-34-TRUTH. I advocate biblical obedience more than civil disobedience. I put the emphasis on obedience. Benjamin Franklin coined the phrase, rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. I agree with that. I put the emphasis on obedience to God rather than rebellion against tyrants. 866-34-TRUTH. Look, I'm speaking to so many people that live in the state of New York, that live in D.C. and Maryland and Virginia, just to give a few major examples of some of our largest listening audiences. And we've had a situation come up in North Carolina, and this is going to be coming up in other parts of America, where activist judges overturned the will of the people and said, we are now going to recognize two men or two women, quote, marrying. And as a result of that, at least six magistrates in North Carolina resigned, said, we cannot recognize this as marriage, therefore we will resign. The other thing they could have done is simply refused to do it and then let things take their course legally as well. So what do you do when you're in a situation when you were told to do something that you cannot do in conscience? Because we cross the line when the Bible is explicit on something, or when we have an explicit conviction of conscience based on what's clearly taught in Scripture or biblical principles, with all respect, not with anger, not with who do you think you are, not with defiance, but with honor for the authority. As Watchman Nee said, submission is absolute. Obedience is conditional. With honor of the authority, we say we must obey God rather than man. Back to the phones, Doug in Andover, New Jersey. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, hi. As believers, our authority is our Creator, and we get the law from the Bible and what we're supposed to do from the Bible. But for government in the United States, everybody who's in public office takes an oath to uphold the Constitution. And the authority, the one who bears the sword, is actually the citizens who have the right to bear arms and watch the people in government who are limited and who are in treason when they violate their rights.
All right, so you would see it uniquely in America to be even more black and white, and even because of the Constitution and our fundamental documents saying that if the government acts against the people, then you can establish a new government. So along with Scripture, as Americans, we would have that constitutional issue. Doug, in your view, what was done to the Houston pastors and a demand to see sermons, communications, etc., that were dealing with homosexual issues, gender identity issues, in your mind, was that a direct assault on religious liberty and our constitutional rights?
Yes, and the person who did it, in my view, is guilty of treason, should be tried and prosecuted for that.
All right. Doug, thank you for weighing in clearly. I appreciate that. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me mention to you, before I run out of time, and then I'll do my best to get to more calls. Many of you have not been able to read my 700-page book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, where I explain that there really is a gay activist agenda to transform America, and here's where it's going, and here's where it's gone so far. And 700 pages, 1,500 endnotes, it's like a $30 hardcover. Some of you had the time or maybe the resources to do it. Together with another ministry, we condensed some of the key chapters and put it out in a nice, small paperback, about 60, 70-something pages. It's called The Stealth Agenda. This is not hype. We only have a limited number of copies of this, a very limited number. We've packaged it together as a free gift when you get my DVD two-hour debate with Harry Knox. Harry Knox is a gay activist who claims to be a born-again Christian, a long-term relationship with another man, and he and I had a debate, very civil, in 2008, called The Christian Response to Homosexuality. Our ministry booked the Booth Playhouse of the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center. We divided the tickets, about 400 tickets, equally between Harry Knox's group and mine so that we could have a completely mixed, diverse audience. It's a real eye-opener. You'll see how I present things with love and grace and truth together. You'll see how Harry Knox represents his side also graciously, but it's a real eye-opener. The DVD is only $20 plus postage. It's 2+ hours. But this week, you get the DVD. It's nicely packaged. We'll pay the postage, and we'll give you a free copy of A Stealth Agenda. So it's just $20 postage paid for everything, but supplies are limited. It's not a hype thing. Normally, we have unlimited supplies. But this week, supplies of Stealth Agenda are limited. So give us a call, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. I'll give you that number once more, 1-800-278-9978, or go to my website if that's easier, order right online, AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the line of fire, 866-34-TRUTH. We've been talking about when it's right to disobey earthly authorities. And the principle as laid out by Watchman Nee was simply this, that submission is absolute, obedience is conditional, that we're always submitted to authorities. In other words, if you were in some radical communist country and they said you cannot preach the gospel, and you went to preach the gospel anyway, you went to share with your friends and coworkers, they come and put you in prison. Well, you submit to their authority to throw you into prison, but you disobey their edict not to preach, and you keep trying to preach within prison. This is a biblical pattern. When the Hebrew midwives were told to put the children of Israel to death, the sons born to the Israelites to death, in Exodus, the first chapter, they disobeyed and God blessed them for that. So again, the principle is we are people of obedience. When the earthly authority tells us to disobey God's authority, we obey God rather than man. But I've often said this, before you say, I must obey God rather than man, prove to me that you're a person who honors authority. Prove to me, that you have a track record of honoring authority. 866-34-TRUTH. Back to the phones. John in Fairfax, Virginia. Welcome to the line of fire.
Good evening. I just want to appreciate for a good job you're doing there. And based on what you're talking, it's true there's standards that mankind has put even in churches, and then there's God's standards. And I'm glad what you're bringing out, that God's standards need to outstand anyone, and we can see that, especially when it comes to war, we see a lot of people that are Christians and brothers, you know, really brothers in the fact that they're under the same God, just in different countries. They call themselves Christians and son of God, but when it comes to war, they're killing one another, and one of the identification of Christ, Jesus people, was the love. So therefore, if these people got the love of God, they would never go and participate in war and killing others. They would be more obedient to God. And I can see a great example with the Jehovah's Witnesses. They do this because they follow God's authority rather than mankind's authority. So it's good that you're bringing this out, Mike.
Yeah. Of course, the tragedy with Jehovah's Witnesses is their whole religion is fundamentals are false. The fundamentals of the faith they hold to are false, and they believe Jesus was a created being, and they don't believe that we can have assurance of salvation and forgiveness of sins in the here and now. There are many other bizarre teachings that they have, and their translation of the Bible is a very poor and misleading translation. The question of pacifism, though, is a totally separate one. So let me just make sure I understand this, though. So we were wrong to stop the Nazis from slaughtering innocent people. We were wrong to join in World War II against the Nazis.
I'm saying that we're wrong to kill others that are the same Christian faith. And when they go to war, there's many that have the same Christian faith.
Yeah. How do you work that out? Obviously you hate that happening, but if you had people who are Christians who had to
Christians and son of God, and we're killing our own brothers that
Well, no, just answer the question though. If you have Christians who were required by the Germans to fight in World War II, and we are bombing the Nazis, how can you avoid killing people who are believers? I mean, you're not trying to, but that's what happens in war sometimes.
Right, but there's no justification. If we, like you just said, if we would have maintained ourselves the God standards or authority not to go and do that, then...
Well, I know. So we shouldn't have bombed the Nazis. So in other words, rather than stopping the Nazis from killing millions of innocent people, because there's a possibility there might be a Christian fighting in their army, we let the millions die? That doesn't sound right to me. But thanks for the interaction.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Let me just spend a moment discussing with you Brittany Maynard. Did she know God? Did God have mercy on her in her closing moments? God alone is the judge. I don't sit here as the judge. I've never been in her shoes. But she's the young woman who got the attention of the nation saying that she had terminal brain cancer and was going to take her life with dignity, was waiting for her husband's birthday, and then after that was going to take her own life with the help of physicians. So physician-assisted suicide. We did talk about it. I wrote a column about euthanasia. You can read it by going to AskDrBrown.org and clicking on latest articles. Why is it that we have a problem with this? Why is it that we don't just say, look, she knew her time was limited. Her condition began to degenerate. She knew what was ahead, an agonizing, slow death. No matter how rapid it would be slow because of the level of suffering. Losing your faculties, losing your ability to communicate, and you're slowly going to degenerate over a period of months or weeks, days, and die. Why not end your life with dignity while you have the opportunity? And again, while it's an agonizing question, because we would put an animal out of its misery, especially if we knew there was no hope of recovery, there are people who write in their living wills, do not use any extraordinary means to keep me alive. In other words, you operate, you do what you can do, but if you're just going to put me on life support, I'm going to exist as a vegetable or something like that, don't do that. Why is this different? And obviously, the difference is that in this situation, we are inserting ourselves as God, the one who gives life and who takes life. The only time that it's right for a human being to take a life is capital punishment. Now, that can be debated in terms of its ongoing application in society because of an imperfect justice system and the possibility of putting a non-guilty person to death. But as laid out in Genesis, the 9th chapter, because human beings are created in God's image, that if someone takes a human life, then their life must be forfeit because of the dignity of a human being. In other words, to just say, okay, you get 5 years or 10 years in prison because you took another life, that diminishes the dignity of that life created in the image of God. But otherwise, it's not up to us to intervene. It's not up to us to say, okay, that person's suffering is too extreme, we're going to end their life. And it's for a number of reasons. It's for a number of reasons. One reason is that the line can never be drawn with any clarity. What if it's severe pain, and that's why you want to take the life, but this person could continue living for years, and perhaps there are ways to medicate that pain. Oh, I'm not diminishing those who have chronic pain. I'm not diminishing the torture of their lives. I'm not diminishing the fact that it almost reduces them to just surviving and not even having a life. I'm not minimizing that. I've never been in a situation like that long term at all. The only terrible pain I've ever had has been very, very short and probably wouldn't even be categorized as terrible. And I've never had some debilitating terminal disease. Years back, when I was diagnosed with hepatitis C, God miraculously healed me of that. So that was the only time I even faced that question of something that could potentially cut my life short, but even so would not be in some way as terrible as other people would suffer. But the problem is, again, a clear line cannot be drawn. And we end up taking people's lives or assisting them in taking their lives for many, many reasons. And ultimately, it also says that there can be no meaning in the midst of suffering. There can be no purpose in the midst of suffering. Oh, I'm not saying that God sends diseases on us as blessings. I don't believe that. I'm not saying that God strikes someone with terminal cancer as a sign of his love and goodness and to manifest his character. I don't believe that for a split second. And I do believe that many things we suffer, well, everything we suffer is ultimately because we're in a fallen world, but many things we suffer are a result of our disobedience and sin. Oh, I'm not implying that about this young woman. But let's say, for example, I was an alcoholic and I get cirrhosis of the liver. I'm to blame for that. There's no mystery in that. And there are other things that are clearly demonic attacks, works of Satan to destroy. If you go through the Gospels, you'll be amazed to see how often demonic powers and disease are linked together, how often driving out demons goes along with healing the sick. Acts 10:38 tells us how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Spirit and power. He went about doing good and healing all who were oppressed by the devil. So that is something that the devil does. All that being said, we simply do not have the right to say, well, this suffering is too much. There are people who suffer from severe depression, and it's based on lies. It could be based on something not functioning properly in the brain. It could be due to other issues. But there are people who are depressed. I remember watching a discussion about this, a man who had advocated euthanasia, and he wrote a book about this, encouraging euthanasia, and there was a woman on from a hospice, and she said, look, in a hospice, we can alleviate pain sufficiently so that someone can die peacefully and in dignity, and when you counsel people, well, if you're depressed, here's how to identify depression. So don't kill yourself just because you're depressed. She said the person who's depressed is not able to diagnose the fact that they're depressed. And yet someone may want to take their own lives because they lose hope. Again, I'm not saying it's easy, and I've never been in those shoes of hopeless depression, and you can't see your way out day after day after day after day. I'm simply saying when we ultimately put it in our hands when someone is worthy of living or someone is worthy of dying, or when my life is worth living and when I'm going to end it, we take something in our own hands beyond what God has entrusted to us. And it ends up, if you look in Holland, thousands of elderly and infants have been euthanized without patient or parental permission. Doctors made decisions. Old person, at best, they're even without the disease, maybe they'll live 6 months or a year. They're in agony. They're in terrible suffering. It's going to cost a ton of money just to keep them alive. There's going to be no quality of life at all. So we'll end it. We'll end it. They've said, oh, yeah, we've done that often without anyone's permission. Infants, the same thing. Okay, we've seen this horrifically malformed condition before. And we know that it's going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars of surgery, and the child will end up living 6 months or a year, so we will just euthanize them. Who gave them the right to do that? And who is to say that that terribly malformed baby cannot bring meaning and purpose to the parents' lives as difficult and painful and agonizing as it would be to see their child suffer? Again, you can make a case when you argue about mercy killing. You can make a case when you argue about someone terminal and why must they descend to the absolute pit of suffering rather than end their lives earlier. The problem is a line cannot be drawn. It always ends up being abused. And then it ultimately does say that there can be no meaning that comes in the midst of our suffering and our weakness and our pain. I'm not focused on that subject today as major and painful as it is, but if you want to weigh in, maybe I'll take a call or two on that, 866-34-TRUTH. If you haven't read my article on time to obey God rather than man, I encourage you to read it. Just go to AskDrBrown.org and click on latest article. When we come back, I'm going to change the subject for a moment and talk about Bill Maher. Yeah, Bill Maher. Joey, let's grab clips 9 through 11 and have them ready right after the break. Remember to check out this week's special resource offer. Go to AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. And when you go there, right on the homepage, click on the special offer there. And when you do, I just want to explain this to you. You'll see the DVD two-hour debate that I did with Harry Knox, who is a gay activist who claims to be a born-again follower of Jesus. That's normally $20 plus postage. This week we pay the postage, but we're giving you a free copy of A Stealth Agenda. This is a specially condensed version of my 700-page book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. We only have a limited supply of these, so order now to get the free Stealth Agenda.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Before I get over to Bill Maher, let's just talk for a moment about the question of ending one's own life. Christina in Charlotte, North Carolina, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a comment on ending your life with hospice as well. And my belief is that they're also taking your life into their hands and ending the life, because you're giving drugs that are comforting you and slowing down your heart rate until you die. And I feel
Is it actually slowing down the heart rate on that level? I wasn't aware of that, actually. I mean, I'm no expert on it. I thought it was slowing down the heart rate to make you comfortable, but not slowing down the heart rate so as to get you to the point of death.
Well, I would think that we would probably need an expert on this. I was talking with a nurse, and it hit me one day when I was on an airline flight, and we were talking about dying and people dying, and she's a nurse. And it just really struck me that that's exactly what they're doing. So I flat out asked her, and she said yes.
All right. Well, let's wait for an expert on that. All right. Maybe we can get an opinion. If someone's listening and has some expertise, that would be great to know. All right. But
thank you
for the call. I appreciate it. All right. Bill Maher, you know, has been a God basher, a Christian basher, for quite some time. We know that. And he has been bashing Islam, and in bashing Islam, he has come under increasing criticism for doing that. And he's interacting with Ruler Jibril and then Senator Agnes King from Maine. And what happened was that Bill Maher has had a petition against him saying that he should not be the commencement speaker at Berkeley when they have graduation next year, that he should not be the commencement speaker. And he has said, hey, the commencement, this is your graduation, it's about you, but I thought this is all about free speech. And my perception is, as long as he's bashing Christians, it's fine. When he bashes Muslims, there's a problem. So let's listen to some of this interaction. We'll start with clip number 9.
And I am actually a secular Muslim. And when you talk about Islam in a certain way, I have to tell you, and it's offensive sometimes.
It's okay to be offensive. That's what free speech is all about. If free speech is only speech you like, it's not free speech.
Ah, all right. So I agree. I agree with that. We have to be able to say things that offend one another freely, as long as it doesn't cross a certain line, you know, and incite to violence or something like that. Okay, clip number 10 as the discussion continues. So again, that was first Ruler Jibril and then Senator Angus King from Maine joining in. Clip number 10.
Every time I say something you don't like, it's not a serious conversation, or I'm a bigot. I'm sorry. In your world, either I'd say exactly what you want me to say, or a bigot. And
look,
that just doesn't work
for me.
If you're...
all right. Now listen. I profoundly differ with Bill Maher on so many things. I profoundly differ with his moral standards on many issues. I profoundly differ with him about God, about the faith, about the Bible. But in point of fact, yeah, how can there be free speech if we can't freely speak things that could offend each other politically, religiously, socially, as long as it's done in a way that does not create an environment where someone is now going to be hurt or discriminated against because of what I say. If I speak in such a way that you won't serve a Muslim in your restaurant, you are provoked by me, then I have gone too far. But if I say that Islam is not a true revelation of God, or Muhammad is not a true prophet, or the Quran is not the true word of God, and you get up and say, well, the Bible is not the true word of God, and you know, you're a Muslim and you say that Jesus was a Muslim and Christians are wrong, well, you have freedom to do that, and I have freedom to do that. That's one of our freedoms we have in America. One more clip number 11.
For you, we are all jihadists.
I know that in many places in the world, if you left your religion, what would happen?
Guess what? Let me tell you something.
It would be okay.
You could walk
inside. You could walk inside a door in Gaza and say, you know what? I'm a Presbyterian today.
Maybe not in Gaza, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Maybe not in Gaza. How about Iran? How about Saudi Arabia? How about Pakistan? Shall we look? Pakistan's what, almost 190 million people thereabouts? How about Pakistan? How about other parts of, how about Syria? How about other parts of the Muslim world? I think in this case that Bill Maher is correct. And again, my profound differences with him are the very things that he would advocate. All right, one more call. Jimmy, I saw your subject line. I want to get you in real quick. Go for it.
Hey, Dr. Brown. How you doing? Just thanks for taking my call. And so basically, I said a good question. I just wanted to know what you thought about this. And then based around like what you were talking about today with, you know, civil disobedience and stuff like that, what is your opinion on basically, like, is it ever okay to lie in order to protect other people? And I think when we look at, like, Muslims and stuff, I think they even have adoption where that's okay for them or something. But, I mean, so I'm just wondering, like, it's something like that. And so I was wondering, like, basically, like, you know, in the Holocaust, was it ever okay for Gentiles, whatever, to lie in order to protect Jews, stuff like that?
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, we have Rahab would be the best example to save someone's life, that you could certainly advocate for that, that you could certainly say that it is right in certain circumstances in order to save someone's life or protect someone's life, yes, it is right in certain circumstances to lie. And there are people under torture who've been told to give out names of people, and they gave out false names. Richard Wurmbrand did that, gave out false names. And they did that so that they would track down people and find out they didn't exist. But that was to save life. So, yes, there are times, if it was to save life, the Islamic doctrine that you can make a treaty, lie about it in order to come back stronger, that's a whole different issue. That's just lying, and that's false and unjustifiable. But thank you, Jimmy, for the call. I do appreciate it. Rahab would be the best example of that. All right, friends, remember, go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest article to check out what I've written, Time to Obey God Rather Than Man, where I lay out principles. It's not meant so much to be inspirational, but more didactic, more teaching, getting the point across. And then check out the resource offer. And again, no hype. We do have only a limited number of Stealth Agendas left, which we'll be sending you free when you get the DVD of my debate with Harry Knox. My bottom line today, more than advocating civil disobedience, I advocate biblical obedience. There are times when it's best to obey God rather than man. Is there ever a time when you tell government authorities, no, we will not obey? Is it ever right to disobey the authorities in order to obey God? You better believe it.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I stand here today with you that I may speak, preach, and teach on the issues that deal with society, the issues that the Bible speaks about, and be not afraid to be condemned, to be subpoenaed, or to be intimidated by attacks.
From Houston last night, I Stand Sunday, one of the Houston Five, Pastor Hernan Cattano. And he's saying, listen, I'm going to do what's right in God's sight. I do not so much advocate civil disobedience as much as I advocate biblical obedience. I always put the emphasis on obedience. I always put the emphasis on what is right rather than putting it on rebellion or, hey, I'm just not going to do what you're telling me to do. The biblical principle is there are times when we must obey God rather than man. This has always been the case in Scripture. It has always been the case that people have said to the government, they've said it respectfully, they've said it in a way that is honoring. We have to do what God tells us to do. You judge for yourself. I use this analogy in the first hour. If you haven't followed what happened in Houston and the I Stand Sunday meeting last night, I'll catch you up on that. We'll have a couple of guests with some very relevant stories and expertise as well. But to be perfectly clear on this, when we say I must obey God rather than man, it is not a matter of despising authority. It is a matter of honoring authority. The analogy I gave is if you're a private in the army and your immediate supervisor immediately above you says that you have to clean the toilets. Yes, sir. Maybe you've never cleaned toilets in your life. Maybe you find it degrading. Maybe you join the army to get computer skills when you graduate and be trained in the army and then be able to go on to college. You didn't sign up to wash toilets. Doesn't matter. In the army, you submit to the authority, and you do it in an honoring way. Yes, sir. Without, No. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But if the general comes in and finds you cleaning toilets and said, Private, I need you right now to drive me into town. It's an emergency. Yes, sir. You disobey the lower authority because you are obeying the higher authority. Here, in the home, let's make it right in your house, okay? You put the older brother in charge. The older brother is going to tell the younger kids in the household what they have to do because mommy said that she wants the house cleaned, okay? So the older brother is now deciding who's going to do what, and you're told to do a certain thing. And then dad calls and says, I want to speak to you. Listen, I know your brother gave you orders, but I need you to do something different for me right now. Well, in obedience to your father, you disobey your brother. But you don't then go to your brother. Nah, 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 nah. No. You say, hey, dad called and told me I have to do thus and such. And we are obedient to God. Now, someone would say, but look, Jesus said if you're compelled to carry someone's equipment, speaking of a Roman soldier compelling a citizen to carry his arms for a mile, go 2 miles. So when the government tells us to disobey God, you do it. No. You're comparing apples with oranges. We'll be right back. We'll talk about it. And we'll tell you some stuff happening in Canada as well. 866-34-TRUTH.
Fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, so the Houston Five, to catch up, just in case you didn't follow this, these were five pastors in Houston, including my good friend Steve Riggle, who's been on the air with us talking about these issues, pastor of a church of maybe 18, 20,000, Grace Community Chapel in Houston, highly respected, has received numerous awards from the city for his work, the church's work, humanitarian work, community work over the years. He and other pastors were subpoenaed by lesbian activist Mayor Anise Parker and City Attorney David Feldman, saying that they had to turn over their sermons, presentations, communications, everything having to do with their this recent so-called equal rights ordinance bill and anything they said about gender identity, homosexuality. Of course, this was complete overreach, witch hunt. There was a national outcry against it. They then revised it and said, well, we'll get rid of the word sermons, which did nothing, was nothing at all, because it mentions presentations, communication, even private emails with congregants. Complete overreach. Well, last Wednesday, Mayor Parker said, okay, I'm rescinding the subpoenas, which the state attorney general and others urged her to do. I'm rescinding the subpoenas, but I don't want the debate to be about religious liberty. I just want to focus on this great ordinance that we passed. And of course, all these pastors were saying is, let us vote on the ordinance. That's all. And the city attorney, from everything we understand, unjustly, even illegally, threw out the signatures, over 50,000 signatures, when they only needed 17,000 for a petition, saying, let us vote. And the pastors were not involved in a lawsuit that came against Mayor Parker, saying that the throwing out of the petitions, the signatures, was illegal, and that we needed to be able to vote on these things. So the rally went on, despite Mayor Parker saying that she was rescinding the subpoenas. The rally went on Sunday night, and it was watched by tens of thousands. There was an electric atmosphere in the building. I only watched part of it. I spoke to folks who participated in it. And pastors and leaders, they were not attacking gays and lesbians. It was not a hate fest as was advertised on gay websites. It was rather saying, we will hold to our religious liberties. When Jesus said, if you're compelled to carry Roman soldiers' equipment 1 mile, go two, that's saying if you're being inconvenienced, if you're being put out, if the authority is asking you to do something unpleasant, you do it. But the apostles made clear, when they were told not to preach, they're going to preach anyway. When the earthly authority tells you to disobey God, you don't comply with that. If the earthly authority tells you you cannot pray, you don't say, all right, to show you my Christianity, not only will I not pray, I won't read the Bible. Nonsense. So, in point of fact, when we look over at what's happened in Canada, it's all the more chilling. Now, Canada does not have the same history of emphasis on religious liberty. Nonetheless, this is not some communist regime or some Islamic regime. And my friend Peter LaBarbera, who leads Americans for Truth, who has been devoted for years to telling the truth about homosexuality, he's had some chilling experiences of his own in Canada. Pete, glad that you're not in jail right now and can join us on the air.
Yeah, Mike, thanks a lot. Although now I've been through a total of 5 hours of investigations when I try to get into Canada at the airport at the border.
Now, we had you on the air early on in the story to talk about it, but let's start at the beginning. You were going into Canada for a pro-life event a few months back. What happened?
Yes, I was invited to speak at the Saskatchewan Pro-Life Association, which is a pro-life group. A local leftist organization started campaigning to get me dropped as a speaker. Then they went on there. From that point, they went to lobby the government to turn me away. And so they were lobbying, you know, the government under the hate propaganda law, which it's sort of a hate speech law, which bans actions and speech on the basis of sexual orientation. In other words, speech critical of the homosexual activist agenda. So when I got to the border, Regina International Airport, everybody went through customs, and then when I went there, the questions started coming. I ended up being detained for 3 hours. I had my cell phone, my laptop searched, all my luggage, my books, including your book, Mike, Queer Thing Happened to America. That was all searched. Then I was formally declared not allowed entry, denial of entry into Canada. on the basis of Americans for Truth's activities, which they deemed potentially inciting so-called hate in Canada. That we appealed that decision, and we got in to speak finally, and everything went well until I was arrested while participating at a simple pro-life, pro-family protest at the University of Regina, Saskatchewan.
All right, now the what you were doing is actually on video. People can see what happened. What was the big uproar? I mean, aren't you allowed to speak at a university? I mean, were you breaking into classrooms? Were you spray painting buildings? were you attacking people physically? What got the police upset?
Well, actually, I was holding a sign that was made by Bill Watcott, who is the guy I was with. Bill is a really bold pro-family, pro-life warrior, and they don't like him because he asserts his right to disseminate literature based on his biblical beliefs, and I think he's a pretty brave guy. So we were there, and because he was there, they said, we don't want you on campus. I happened to be with him. We did not disrupt anybody. We had great interactions with the students, Mike. You'd think that's what a university is all about, but they said, we don't want you there. And then when Bill and I refused to leave, then they brought in the cops, and I was arrested and put in jail for a whole night simply on a charge which was changed from trespassing to mischief. And I just went back recently to Canada a few days ago to stand trial on that mischief charge.
All right. What happens when you're getting interrogated? What's that been like?
It's been creepy, Mike. I know you'd have the same feeling, and it probably will happen to you if you go to speak in Canada. I mean, they started asking you questions, then they started asking, well, why are you here? I said, I'm here for a trial. And I also said, I'm here with a group called Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. That raised the concern of the guy who was quizzing me. Well, it turns out he was gay. He was a homosexual. And we ended up having some pretty interesting discussions about how you can disagree on this issue without hating one another. And I said, I would gladly sit down with have a cup of coffee with you, and we could talk about the issue. You know, there's room for a civil discussion on this issue. So thank God I had this wonderful conversation. If your listeners want to pray, his name is Shane Paul, neat guy. And he determined basically I was not a hater. But another guy went through my cell phone. They opened up my laptop, and ultimately they seized. Somebody had given me a video called Sodom, which is a new Russian documentary about the homosexual agenda, and they ended up seizing that, Mike, under the hate propaganda law. And here's what's going to happen. If they find it does violate the hate propaganda law, it will be destroyed. If they find it doesn't, they're going to mail it back to me.
Ah, all right. Did they have any comments about a queer thing happened to America?
You know what? Not this time. I brought it intentionally, and I also brought your other book, the new book about so-called gay Christianity. And actually, I said, this is a great book for you to read. Now, I didn't want to be too pushy and look like I was trying to direct my comments, right at Shane Paul. But I said, these are great books. And I actually said that you're a terrific example of somebody who opposes homosexual activism and yet loves people who are in that lifestyle. And so, but they seized the video, Mike, and the irony is that the Russian documentary Sodom, the irony is that video is freely available on YouTube in Canada,
right,
and lots
right.
of people have seen it.
you know, one of the things that's interesting is when the Human Rights Campaign came after you and came after me recently, one of the charges that they brought against me was that I claimed that gay activists demonize those who oppose them, which was exactly what they do in coming after us. And yet that's supposedly one of these hate speech crimes that we're guilty of exposing what they do. And then they turn around and actually do that. So it is kind of ironic in the name of tolerance and diversity that you get questioned like this, isn't it?
Yeah, it's sort of it's ironic that in the name of anti-discrimination, homosexual activists pass laws which openly discriminate against Christians and people who oppose homosexuality. Of which there have been many victims in Canada, Mike, as you know, these human rights tribunals under this system. I mean, I hope it's going to go away, but the system they have now is anybody can bring these cases to these tribunals. And what happens is you get these crazy activists who end up filing dozens of these cases basically to harass their opposition. It's really, really tragic.
So where do things, from what you can tell, because a judge is going to rule on this, just got about a minute before the break, what does it look like? Where are things going? How should we be praying?
I would pray for this judge. Her name is Judge Beaton in the Regina Provincial Court, and I think she was listening carefully. We did mention that the Charter, Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, does assert religious freedom, religious liberty, freedom of conscience. So let's just pray that she takes that into account and understands that it is not, you know, it's not right to censor speech on a college campus of all places, where there, where it should be a place where people can debate ideas in a civil discussion.
All right, got it, friends. Let's pray. And this is, Pete, this is really not about you. This is about Canada. This is about larger issues. And that's why Peter is standing where he's standing, for larger issues of gospel liberty. And friends, if it happened in Canada, it can happen in America. Visit the site, AmericansForTruth.com. AmericansForTruth.com. Hey, stay strong, Peter. It was great being with you in Chicago.
Yeah, God bless, Mike. Thanks for all you
Thanks.
Do.
All right.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. I am going to return in a moment to the subject of biblical obedience when we disobey man in order to obey God. The biblical examples for that. Why it was right for the pastors in Houston to say to the city, we are not turning over our sermons and communications to you, not because they didn't want the city to know what they were saying, but because the city completely violated their constitutional rights of religious freedom, and the city was seeking to intimidate these religious leaders. As I've said many times, the bullying is backfiring. The bullying is backfiring. And it is only waking up believers to stand for what's right. And whenever I'm involved in anything having to do with homosexuality, I'm always calling for prayer for those who identify as LGBT, that God's love and goodness and truth would flow through their communities to the salvation and transformation of many. But before we get back to that, in the first hour, I spoke briefly about the sadness of Brittany Maynard, the young woman with terminal brain cancer, terminating her life with the help of physicians, physician-assisted suicide over the weekend. This had gotten national attention. We discussed euthanasia on the air. In the first hour, I talked about that and why, no matter what the suffering, that we cannot just intrude ourselves and say, okay, that's too much pain or too much suffering, we're going to end the life here. The reasons why I differed for that, well, but without sitting as her judge and jury. I can't imagine what the husband and family are going through right now in terms of the loss. And may God use this tragedy to turn hearts to him in the midst of it and to bring hope to others who are suffering. May God turn this around for his redemptive purposes. But we got into a discussion at the end of the last hour about hospice care. And does hospice care use drugs that will slow someone's heart beat down to the point that it does actually take their lives prematurely? So with the goal of getting the person comfortable, getting them in a place where they're not in agony, does it actually terminate life? And anyway, just a follow-up call to that subject. So let's go to Hyattsville, Maryland. Bob, thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. Oh, what's your family situation, sir?
Well, actually, hospice has been a godsend to her. My mother, she just turned 98 October 4th. I think that's right around your mother's age, I think you said.
My mom just turned 92, so pretty close, though.
But, yeah, it's great. Well, you know, anyhow, all the stuff that she went through with surgeries and stuff in the last couple of years or so, when finally we said, you know, went along with her doctor and she wanted to put her in hospice, she thought it would be helpful, but we really didn't and still don't really know everything about it. But you find out more as you go. She's been in 6 months. She's improved. She's the healthiest I've seen her in years. And she got another 60 days. They have to do it that way because when I just found out recently, they think on terms of you being maybe probably being around with us 6 months, and then they take it at 60-day increments pending, and it has to do with the insurance companies and stuff, too. And they have a kit, you know, that has morphine and I don't know what all is in it. And, but they, everything, I mean, she's just been improved, you know, since she's been in it. But I always get, I get the creep sometimes anyhow about stuff. But I just wonder, you know, about that stuff. And I remember you, the person who had called in, when talking about the person she spoke to, said that they were asking for maybe if an expert would call in. And I was hoping maybe somebody would because, I mean, I don't know how to get it.
Yeah, so the expert question had to do with, are there drugs given, say, morphine, that would slow someone's heart down sufficiently so that you're actually taking their life in advance? You're shortening their life, and it's another form of euthanasia. So, again, I didn't have the expertise to address that. But from everything I understand, hospice care is the opposite of euthanasia. Because it's saying, let nature take its course, let God do what he wants to do, depending on someone's beliefs as they're coming in there. We will make this person comfortable. I had a relative at the end of his life, a brother-in-law who was in hospice care, and I would say that those close to him would say that it was in every way positive and loving, and if you're going to go, a way to go with dignity. But again, the specific question of how much morphine or other drugs would it take to sufficiently slow the heart down so as to increase the likelihood of dying sooner, don't know. Because the call came right at the end of an hour, yeah. I was not expecting a call. But we will check because the question came up. And may God be with your mom. Is she a believer?
Yes, she is. Yes, she is. Right, well, as far as I know, most of the people that have come in here are too. You know, it's hard. You know, you take somebody on their word, you know, but at the same time, you know, there's one that I don't know. Sometimes I wonder, there's people that might be some people that get involved in this who might get some sort of a, I don't know how I could participate in doing that type of work, you know. But then, like I say,
there are people, right, with a real love, with a real compassion for those who are suffering. Many of them are believers, and they get involved to be there and to minister hope and mercy to people and treat them compassionately in their dying days. Hey, Bob, may God be with your mom. Thank you, sir, for calling. Again, I'm not sitting here as Brittany Maynard's judge. What she did ultimately is between her and God. I've never been faced with the same situation. I can't imagine thinking of making the decision that she made, obviously, from my perspective, but I'm not in her shoes, and I'm not here to judge her as much as to address the larger issue and to say, let's pray that God would take this and use this for good. Tell you what, let me really quickly, Ken, whoops, sorry about that. I hit the wrong button. Ken in Tampa Bay, we've just got a minute, but could you weigh in on the hospice question?
I've lost most of them. And my wife to under hospice care. Okay?
Say that again, please.
I've lost my mother in 07 under hospice care and my wife, Barbara, that you prayed for in August of 2013 when I was at the radiation center with my wife.
Yeah. I'm so sorry, Ken. When you say you lost them to hospice care, do you mean that their lives were cut short because of hospice care?
Yes. In my mother's case, they cut off all water and food. They wouldn't let her eat or drink any water for over 2 weeks before she finally passed away. Her body was burning up when she passed. And she could still look at me and listen to me and react to me while she was going through all this. She wasn't stone cold, you know, out of it. And that's what I watched. And then I watched hospice drug her to the point where her body shut down.
I can't. Listen, I'm literally out of time. I'm very glad that you were able to share what you shared. And we will definitely look into this further and have a further conversation. But may God's grace fill these deep wounds that you must have right now.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
And it is time that we as a country stand and pledge ourselves that we will not be intimidated and we will not fold under the pressure, because we recognize that there has been bloodshed by people in uniform throughout 240 years of this great country's history. They did not die for us to shut up. They died so that we would be able to stand up. And tonight, we must stand up.
That was the voice of Governor Mike Huckabee speaking at I Stand Sunday last night in Houston. Joining me now on the line of fire is Christina Holcomb, who serves as litigation counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom, where she's an invaluable member of the Center for Religious Liberty. Christina, thanks so much for joining us on the line of fire.
Dr. Brown, thank you so much for having me.
And I'm sorry, Christiana, I mispronounced your name. My apologies.
No worries.
Now, I've spoken with other ADF attorneys. We've had Pastor Steve Riegel on the air with us. We've been right in the thick of the Houston situation. But do you feel that once the mayor rescinded the subpoenas that put an end to this, or was it still necessary to hold the I Stand Sunday rally?
Well, absolutely, Dr. Brown. No pastor, no American should ever be punished for speaking out. And while we're very gratified that the First Amendment rights of the pastors, the Houston Five, so to speak, have triumphed over the government overreach and intimidation, we're not there yet. We're not done yet. That was really just one aspect of this disgraceful abuse of power by the city of Houston. But all of this really started back when the city of Houston arbitrarily threw out thousands and thousands of valid voter signatures. So while we commend the mayor for withdrawing her unconstitutional subpoenas against our Houston Five, we now urge the mayor to take the next step that needs to happen. She needs to permit all Houstonians to vote on this controversial bathroom bill.
All right, Christiana, on what basis did City Attorney David Feldman throw out the petition once the woman responsible for validating signatures got past 19,000, she stopped counting because there were over 50,000. So she knew even if you had just a few here and there that didn't pass, it obviously passed muster. Clearly enough, the city attorney invalidated them. Was this just an illegal act, a tyrannous act? I mean, it almost seems too radical to believe he would just do that.
Yeah, Dr. Brown, this is absolutely outrageous. Neither the mayor nor the city attorney have any authority under the Houston City Charter to invalidate signatures. The authority to validate signatures and to permit a referendum to move forward is entrusted solely to the city secretary. And the city secretary in this case found that there were more than enough, thousands, more than enough signatures to move forward and permit this issue to go to a vote.
All right, so The subpoenas have been withdrawn. Now there's obviously a push to say, let us vote on this and to challenge the invalidation of the signatures. What about the fact that Mayor Parker never clearly affirmed religious liberty? It seemed to me from her statement that she was more saying, I don't want that to be the discussion. I just want to focus on the ordinance. Has she said what she did was wrong at any point?
You know, not to our knowledge, but really there was nothing left for her to do. She violated the First Amendment freedom of speech of these pastors and really sparked a national outcry from individuals all across the spectrum, left and right, were calling her to withdraw their unconstitutional subpoenas. So we encourage Mayor Parker to really take the next step. I mean, it's never too late to make the right decision. And we ask her to move forward and allow the city of Houston to vote on this bill.
All right. I'm going to be right back with Christiana Holcomb. She is an attorney focusing in particular on religious liberty, working with the Alliance Defending Freedom. And I want to talk about something that's been happening with increasing frequency, where pastors are actually endorsing candidates from the pulpit. And right now, the IRS seems to be looking the other way. We'll be right back.
Yeah. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am speaking with Christiana Holcomb of the Alliance Defending Freedom. She focuses on religious liberty. We're talking about what happened in Houston, the I Stand Sunday rally, which was watched by tens of thousands last night on the web and thousands in person, with guests like Phil Robertson, Mike Huckabee, my friends the Benham Brothers, and the pastors involved as well. And a line has been crossed, and the bullying of religious leaders is backfiring. It has to, because of the overreach. But Christiana, the ADF has launched an initiative in recent years, Pulpit Freedom Sunday, encouraging pastors, normally the beginning of October, to publicly speak about political issues from the pulpit, basically to directly challenge the IRS regulation that certain political speech is prohibited from the pulpit. What's your motivation in doing this? Are you folks just trying to stir up trouble against the IRS? What's the motivation?
Well, the motivation here, Dr. Brown, is that pastors do not surrender their First Amendment rights when they step into the pulpit. Pastors should be free to decide what they're going to preach without any IRS censorship or government coercion or having the IRS intrude into your sermon notes, so to speak. Because, as we all know, the Bible speaks to every aspect of life, if not explicitly, then in principle. And that includes our civic duty as citizens of this great country, our right to vote, and really the positions of candidates for political office. You know, the scriptures speak in principle to every aspect of life, and the pastors should be the ones deciding what they preach about, not the IRS.
Now, can you just tell us very briefly, we've discussed this months back with one of your attorneys, but I just want to revisit this. Where did this IRS regulation first come from?
Sure. Well, the IRS regulation comes from what we call the Johnson Amendment. And the Johnson Amendment was passed in 1954, basically as a politically motivated amendment designed to silence nonprofits from speaking out. Well, what that in turn has done is silenced pastors from the pulpit from talking about these issues. And really, it's been used as a weapon against churches. And the IRS has used it as a tool of intimidation against pastors. And so what we've done through Pulpit Freedom Sunday is designed to restore the freedom of the pulpit from this government coercion and let pastors know that you are free under the First Amendment to speak to these issues.
Now, a concern that many would have, though, would be that we can sometimes get so political from our pulpits then that we get away from biblical message and morality and family and life and preaching the gospel and helping the poor and the needy. Do you find there to be a real dichotomy between the religious world and the political world, or do you think there's substantial overlap?
Well, politics has come to the church. The church has not come to politics. So issues that would not have been considered political even 20 or 30 years ago, for example, the definition of marriage, are now being considered political issues. And we know that the scripture speaks very clearly to these matters. So the big picture here is not whether or not the church should be involved in politics. It's really who should be deciding what is said from the pulpit. Is that a decision that should be made by the church and its pastor or by the IRS?
Yeah, and again, such simple truth and clarity in what you're saying. One last question, Christiana. I appreciate your time being with us. You have advocated for Elaine Photography, where that company was found guilty of discrimination based on sexual orientation when the young woman who heads up Elaine Photography politely declined shooting a lesbian commitment ceremony. And I think there were other things. Was it some horror show or something? Something she had previously declined shooting just because of her beliefs. So she was fined for that, found guilty of that. You've tried to get that up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court doesn't want to hear that. What happens now when someone in good conscience, we've got the Sweet Cakes by Melissa, now case after case after case across the country, someone in good conscience says, we can't do this. It's a violation of our beliefs. And now they're being fined. They're potentially facing jail sentences if they don't pay a fine. What happens now? How do you handle this as the ADF?
Yeah. Well, it's a great travesty, Dr. Brown, because in America, people should be free to live and work according to their religious beliefs. I mean, that's one of the foundational principles upon which our nation was founded. So we encourage those whose rights are being violated or who are being forced to operate their business in contradiction to their religious convictions to contact Elias Defending Freedom and allow us to review their situation and see if we're able to help.
And in a case where people are told they're going to have to pay fines and things like that, obviously I'm not asking for your legal opinion or advice about cases that may actually be in progress. But do you think that there are individuals who say to pay the fine is also a violation of our conscience and that they'll continue to stand regardless of the consequences?
You know, I do believe there are people out there, absolutely, who are going to stand regardless of the consequences, because we know that forcing Christians to surrender their faith in order to keep their job or to run a business is frankly unconstitutional, and we hope that the judicial system will recognize this and decide their cases in accordance with these individuals' free exercise of religion and their free speech rights as well.
All right, I said that was the last question, but I've got one last one. In the midst of all this, with so much negative and with so many things seeming to go against us and with activist judges overturning the will of the people, are you ready to throw in the towel and say, well, we've lost this battle, we just have to capitulate?
Absolutely not. And I hope your listeners will stand with us as well, because we know that we have truth on our side. We have our First Amendment freedoms on our side, and ultimately we have the Lord's truth on our side as well. So there is great reason for hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm looking at this, unless the Lord returns sooner, this is a multi-generational issue. And if things shift it this quickly in one direction, they can shift in another direction. And we know that God's ways in a lasting way are best. The website, alliancedefendingfreedom.org. Christiana, it's a delight speaking with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Again, the website, alliancedefendingfreedom.org. Or if it's easier, telladf.org if you want to follow these cases and see what is happening. I want to play one more clip from I Stand Sunday, and this is clip number 18. We'll play it, and I'll see if you recognize the voice. Clip number 18.
That you will stand firm in one spirit, contending as one man for the faith of the gospel. Now listen, without being frightened in any way by those who oppose you, trust me, it's coming.
Ah, who was that? Excuse me, whose voice was that? Yeah, my son-in-law Jimmy would get it right for sure. In fact, Matt, I got to show you a fun picture that I was sent from Jason and David Benham from the event. Yeah, that was Phil Robertson, and yes, my son-in-law Jimmy follows Duck Dynasty, and yes, my son-in-law Jimmy and grandson Connor are hunters. Yep, that was Phil Robertson speaking at I Stand Sunday. So let me share with you the way Watchman Nee laid this out, all right? And if you want to weigh in on this, when is it right to disobey the earthly authorities? When is it wrong to disobey earthly authorities? Read my article, AskDrBrown.org. Click on latest article. And then please go to the phones and give us a call at 866-34-TRUTH to weigh in. So Watchman Nee said this: submission is a matter of attitude. And I quote him in my article. Submission is a matter of attitude, while obedience is a matter of conduct. Peter and John answered the Jewish religious council, whether it is right in the sight of God to hearken unto you rather than to God, judge ye, Acts 4:19. Their spirit was not rebellious, since they still submitted to those who were in authority. Obedience, however, cannot be absolute. Some authorities must be obeyed, while others should not be, especially in matters which touch upon Christian fundamentals, such as believing the Lord, preaching the gospel, and so forth. Children may make suggestions to their parents, yet they must not show an unsubmissive attitude. Submission ought to be absolute. Sometimes obedience is submission, where at other times an inability to obey may still be submission. So Watchman Nee said, when delegated authority, men who represent God's authority and direct authority God himself are in conflict. One can render submission but not obedience to the delegated authority. Let us summarize this under 3 points. Number one, obedience is related to conduct. It is relative. Submission is related to heart attitude. It is absolute. Number two, God alone receives unqualified obedience without measure. Any person lower than God can only receive qualified obedience. Number three, should the delegated authority issue an order clearly contradicting God's command, he will be given submission but not obedience. We should submit to the person who has received delegated authority from God, but we should disobey the order which offends God.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
And I want to point out one major thing in terms of obeying God rather than man. All right? I want to emphasize this because it's really, really important. And whenever I do speak about these things, in my book, Revolution in the Church, I deal with them at length in a chapter. Whenever I speak about these things, I seek to emphasize a few important points because it's all too easy for us to just be rebellious, for us to just have a bad attitude, for us to dishonor authority. We must be people who love authority, because we recognize that God has established authority. And without authority, the world could not function. Without authority, society would fall apart. If there is no authority in the household, if there is no authority in the school, if there is no authority in the workplace, if there is no authority in the government, if there's no authority in the military, if there's no authority in society, society would fall apart. You would have instant chaos and destruction. Simple. It's that simple. God establishes authority. I read in the first hour from Romans 13 where Paul explicitly says that we are to submit ourselves to the earthly authorities. And therefore, we recognize the importance of authority. To this day, if I ever have to interact with a policeman, hopefully not because I'm being stopped for something, but for any reason, or it happened once that something was not, inspection sticker was not put on my license plate, because I don't normally handle that. It's sent in somewhere else in the office, and either an assistant will just put it on or they'll give it to me to put on, but somehow it never got given to me, so I had no idea. So I got pulled over and found out that it was missing. Well, I'm not going to say, man, I'm in a hurry. What are you bothering me for? It's not my fault. Why would I do that? That's the policeman, and he's just doing his job, or she's doing her job. So my posture would be, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, and be as respectful as I can be. And if for some, maybe they're having a bad day and they were unpleasant, I'm still respectful because they are the authority. Now, let's have some crazy, ridiculous thing, which is not going to happen in America, at least not now. But let's just say there's some crazy thing where the police officer said, I see you have a Bible in your car, and I'm requiring you to turn that Bible over to me or you're going to jail. Again, it's just a ridiculous scenario here in America, at least America as we know it. I wouldn't say, you jerk, you fool. You know, who do you think you are? You're going to have to answer to God, boy. No, if he was half my age, if he was 30, I'm almost 60, I would still say, sir, with all respect, I have every right to have that Bible and I'm not turning it over. If you don't turn that over, you're going to jail. Well, you can arrest me if you want, but it's an illegal arrest and it's an unjust arrest, and that Bible is my Bible. Now, I'm not going to physically get into a fist fight with him over it, okay? But I wouldn't comply. Or if he said to me, where are you going? I'm on my way to teach. Well, you're not allowed to teach. Well, I'm going to teach about the gospel. You're not allowed to. Sir, you have no authority to tell me that. With all respect, you have no. I'm still going to treat him with respect for his role as an authority figure, but because he stepped over that role, again, just a non-existent scenario at the moment in America, but something that, who knows, if America changed, could happen, as has happened in other countries where preaching the gospel openly is forbidden, in point of fact, I would disobey. Why? Because he's telling me to disobey God. The key thing is you must have a right attitude towards authority. You say, why? Well, it's God our honoring to do so. That's one thing. And another thing is this, that all too often we cloak our self-will, we cloak our rebellion in God talk. A pastor wants us to do something and says, listen, I feel what you're doing is disruptive, that you've got this little group, you meet with your members of the church, but you have this little group and you teach against what we teach in the pulpit. So you don't need to resign from membership or stop doing that because it's divisive and disruptive. Well, the Lord told me to do it. The Lord told me to warn people. I'm going to obey God, not you. That's just self-will and rebellion. That's all that is, self-will and rebellion. And that's why I write in Revolution of the Church, if we are to take a stand for truth, even when others call us extremists, if we are to refuse to submit to unrighteousness, even when pressure mounts on us to compromise, if we are to call for radical change and swim against the tide, even at great personal cost, if we are to do these things, we must be sure that our motivations are not fleshly, that we are not merely manifesting our own independence, that we are not simply rebels with a cause. Put another way, if you really want to be a Jesus revolutionary, you must crucify rebellion, independence, pride, self-will, ambition, anger, rage, retaliation, and all related carnal behavior. You must cultivate humility, long-suffering, and willingness to bear reproach. You must learn to turn the other cheek and overcome evil through good. The true Jesus revolutionary is a person whose flesh has been nailed to the cross. That is radical. And that's why you can then say we have to obey God rather than man. You do it with respect for authority. You do it with honor, but you hold your ground. And as I've said, in terms of cultural issues, we must have hearts of compassion and backbones of steel. So for more on this, again, this is not meant to be an inspirational article, but a teaching article that lays things out. Go to AskDrBrown.org and click on the latest article there. A couple things, some really exciting developments on this end here, as we are in the coming weeks going to completely revamp my radio studio and turn it into a radio/video studio. And we are going to have high-def cameras. We are going to be putting out high-quality video broadcasts of the radio show with all kinds of new features that we can add through video. And we will also be able, can't say exactly when, but hopefully in the first quarter of the new year, be able to live stream a video on the show. Friends, think of it for a minute. Think of it. Major issues happening in America. We have been right here on the front lines addressing things on radio and with special video broadcasts and in writing. Some we have broken the stories, as for example happened with World Vision. We have been right in the front of what's happening in Houston and religious liberty. In fact, writing about things in book form and article form, talking about them on the radio months even before things happen, and then in the midst of all of it, standing with Israel, you're finding out what's really happening in Israel, in the Middle East, and in a unique way, reaching out to the lost sheep of the House of Israel with debates, with apologetics, with Jewish materials available freely online. Would you stand with us? Would you become a torchbearer, a monthly supporter? Your gift of $1 or more per day, so $30 or more per month, some that's a sacrificial gift, some it's done easily, we'll send you as a thank you gift the new Tree of Life version of the Bible. I'll sign it for you, a hardcover version. We were the first of the ministries to get those to make available. And then every month you get a new audio message from me, a special prayer update letter with behind-the-scenes testimonies and other news. You also get a 15% discount in our bookstore and access to our online classes. And you, our torchbearers, are the backbone of our ministry. AskDrBrown.org. Sign up today. My bottom line, it is time to say we must obey God rather than man, regardless of cost or consequence.